No, the thing is, fame is a journey rather than a destination. That's like where people slip up. They think that it's a place.
Yes.
So I'll get to that place. But actually, when you get to that place, it's just nothing. It's just you and that place.
I'm Sonia Morton Firth, and you're tuned in to the Sonia Morton Firth Show. Today, my guests are Right Said Fred, brothers Fred and Richard Fairbrass. Their number one smash hit song, I'm Too Sexy, made it massive in the early 90s. 30 years on, and they're still making music and being vocal for the government's handling of the pandemic. In this interview, we talk about fame, mental health, freedom of speech, and government control. I believe health is the greatest form of wealth we have, which is why I'm so excited to be partnered with Brother in Arms. Brother in Arms is a wellness brand dedicated to working with veterans, first responders, and anyone on the front line. Through their education, support, and premium CBD products, they help alleviate and restore the lives of those that have been affected by physical and mental trauma. Learn about the life-changing benefits and power of CBD. Join their community today. Hit the link below. Right Said Fred. Well, yes. I've got to say thank you so much for being a guest in my home and on my show.
It's a pleasure.
I never thought I'd have the day when I could say Right Said Fred would be in my home.
Exactly. And thanks for letting us stay the night.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem. As long as you're going to sing to me all night, that's all I want. Now, I bet you have loads of people sort of starting the interview sort of saying, I'm too sexy for my shirt.
There is a lot.
Yeah, my singing voice is terrible. The one thing I'd love to know, though, is did you have a cat?
Yes, two.
Yeah, we both had two.
We both had cats, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
And we killed them.
And then ate them. And then we turned them into a cat sandwich. With just the head sticking out.
Yeah. No, we both had two cats, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
My first wife bought them, knowing that I'm allergic.
Right.
Yeah. What an idiot.
I think that was the best line of the song, and I'm too sexy for my cat. Yeah. Anyway, talking of that song, it's 30 years ago.
It is.
And I actually couldn't believe it was 30 years ago. I keep forgetting how old I am. You've been asked this question, I'm sure, 1,000 times, if not more, but I just humour me. I'd love to know. How did I'm Too Sexy come about? How did the song come about?
We were working in a basement studio in, which is somebody's flat actually, in Acton, I think. Yeah. And it was a really hot, it's sort of in the basement, and we'd never worked on computers before, and we didn't really understand what that was. But we were working on another song called Heaven, and the bass line for Heaven was da 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 da, like that. And that's all, and it was going round on a loop. It was a really hot day, so I just went into the guy's, it turned out to be his bedroom, and he had one of those mirrors cut into the wardrobe door, you know, those old-fashioned things. So I just took my shirt off and started singing, I'm too sexy for my shirt. And then we thought, oh, that's interesting. So we all sort of fell about laughing. Fred wasn't sure initially. We were stoned. And it took about 6 months to sort of pin it all together and make sense of it, you know. But we had never written anything like that before, nor had Rob, who was the guy we were working with. So for us, it was a learning curve as well it was for anybody who was listening to it.
Yeah.
So that's how it started. It was just me listening to the loop and singing the bass line. That's it.
Did you ever dream it was going to be the success it was?
Oh, no. Any performer that tells you they know they've got a hit is either lying or stupid.
Yeah. Also, it's the longevity.
Yeah.
Because
longevity, yeah.
Yeah, that's just bizarre. Yeah. You know, and Drake has just done a version of it. And it's like a little industry on its own. We just let it go off and do its...
We often say it's like having a daughter who you love and she's a wonderful part of the family, who then becomes a crack whore and hangs out with people you don't approve of. That's what I'm too sexist like.
So on that note, look, the money and the fame, that must have changed your life completely.
It did.
Very quickly.
Yeah, we didn't. The fame thing in the UK was kind of understandable, in as much as it was fast, but it was sort of containable. Well, it was when we went to America that really blew us away. It was just we had to go into hotels through the kitchen entrance, and you'd go into a restaurant and everyone just stops. And it was, and you'd think in places like New York and Chicago and LA, they're pretty much used to it. But I think it was because the nature of the song and the video. And so we, initially it was great for your ego. I mean, it's amazing.
How did it affect you?
We got a bit big-headed, I think.
Yeah, I think we were difficult.
Yeah, I remember on one occasion we had got the first lot of checks in, we bought cars and stuff. And we had a meeting with our accountants up in Maida Vale. And I said to Steve, our accountant, I said, well, we'll order the limo and we'll come up. And he said, what do you mean order the limo? So I said, well, we'll order the limo. He said, well, you just bought a car. So, and I remember thinking, you're telling me I've got to drive myself
to North London?
To North London. Are you mad? That's where it got. We got a bit silly. And I think if the second album had really taken off, we'd be in rehab right now. We're neighbourhood guys, really, I think.
Yeah, we are. We were offered stuff in LA. We were asked to be in Die Hard with a Vengeance with Bruce Willis.
Yes.
It was Joel Silver who asked us. And we got into the LA thing a little bit and we hang out with various people. But I was never really that happy. I was impressed with who I was in the room with.
Yes, that's
but
what
not
it was.
Particularly impressed with myself. Do you know what I mean? So just, you know, there were lots of famous people we were hanging out with. But in reality, when I thought about it, I just want to go to the gym. I want to play my guitar. I want to be left fuck alone, really.
Yeah.
And that's what really. If we were really ambitious, we would have left our label and gone to a major record company because they were offering us silly money.
And lived in LA.
And if we wanted to pursue that sort of celebrity stroke pop lifestyle, we would have moved to LA. And the fact we didn't do any of that was, and I got back to Putney or Fulham, where it was then. And I just thought, actually, I prefer this. I've got my gym 50 metres down the road, a couple of cafes I go to, I've got my mates.
That's it, good enough.
I've been with my partner at that point for about 12 years, Stuart. And all I wanted to do was get home.
And see him.
Yeah, we've been together for 12 years, and that's all. I remember saying to Wally, and he couldn't understand it.
So if you reflect about what did you learn about yourselves in that journey, in that period?
Not as money-driven as I thought I might be.
No, not as fame-driven either. I'm ambivalent about the fame thing.
Yeah, Richard's...
I'm more interested in it than Freddie.
Yeah, Richard's better at it than I am.
What does fame mean? Because, I mean, I think a lot of people think, oh, these people they see on TV or at the cinema, actors, actresses, pop stars, footballers. Mm. Can you pinpoint fame?
No, the thing is, fame is a journey rather than a destination. That's why people slip up. They think that it's a place.
Yes.
So I'll get to that place. But actually, when you get to that place, it's just nothing. It's just you and that place.
Wow.
It's and that sounds really boring, and not boring, but it seems like an obvious thing to say. It's an internal thing. It has to be internal, and that's so for me. I remember once I was filling up my car with petrol. It sounds ridiculous. My old BMW, and I was just holding the pump. And I was as happy as a pig in thing. I mean, absolutely. I don't know why. Just at that moment, everything was perfect. Lasted about, a minute. And then it wasn't perfect again. I got stuck in the traffic.
Minute's pretty good.
Yeah. But do you know what I mean? It was just moments. And James Stewart said there's no such thing as a classic movie. There's only classic moments within movies. Mm-hmm. And I think he's probably right about that. And I think life is like that. There's great moments. But to expect your entire life to be happy or your entire life to be successful or your entire life to be balanced is probably too much.
And Fred, what did you...?
Fame, it was good for me from an ego point of view because Rob, our guitar player, didn't really go out to the after shows and stuff like that.
No.
Richard was with a partner. And so I was the nominated heterosexual single man in the band.
Yes.
So from a sex point of view, strictly from that, an ego, it was fun. But that after, then after a few months, you think, actually, I just want to hang out with someone I like. I mean, it's great that she's got fantastic boobs or whatever. But after a while, it's like, well, yeah, done that.
What would you say your low points were?
Cancelling our holiday some years ago.
We ran out of money.
And our
They were expensive holidays,
but our accountant phoned up and said, you've got to cancel your holiday. We lost all the airfare because you couldn't get that back, but we cancelled the hotel and as a consequence, we saved all that money. But that's when I suddenly thought, the thing about success is that it happens really quick, but then it fades really slowly. And what's interesting is we were still making lots of money, because the checks take a while to come in, it's all delayed, you know. So you're getting great money coming in, but your profile is actually taking a massive dive. So you kind of still think that you're famous because of all this money's coming in, but you're kind of not.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's a contradictory thing. And so when we cancelled our holiday, that was a low point.
Mine was mostly drug related low point.
Because I ran out.
Yeah. Last grab. I did a lot of drugs for a while, and
what,
I
what sort of drugs do you mind asking?
It was my weapon of choice, and also, so what happens if you do it to the extent I did? You end up first of all, you don't go to bed for days, and you end up in some horrible flat somewhere with a bunch of really unpleasant people, and you find yourself. Because people knew I had money and drugs, I then attracted all the wrong people. So I had quite a few low points, normally at around 7 o'clock in the morning. your whole life is upside down and your brain's twisted and your morals are all up. Yeah, not the right way around at all. Yes. So mostly drug-driven.
And now you both publicly have said that you suffer from depression.
Yeah, yeah. Still do, really. Yeah.
How do you sort of overcome that? Well, what started your depression?
With mine, it was when my partner died. That was the first time I heard end-of-life care. That's when I heard that first expression. We were on a plane going to a gig. And so that was probably when my depression really started. And Fred had a divorce.
Yeah, I didn't realise I was depressed until I went to my GP and she said, what's wrong? And I just started crying. And I was there for about 2.5 hours. She cancelled her whole day.
Dr. Roberts.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
Cancelled her whole day. And I cried on and off for about two and a half hours. And then she diagnosed me with depression. Then what I started doing was, apart from, obviously I tried to hide it with drugs and alcohol, but generally speaking, gym helps. Magnesium I find helps at night.
Exercise.
Good night's sleep. I know it's hard. You can't always get that when you're depressed, but it is a massive. You know, my mum was, you know, when you're a kid, Mum said, you make sure you go to bed before, you know, and you think, oh, shut up.
It's absolutely true. And look, I know you both health buffs. Yeah. Did that really help, the gym?
Yes, it did. Gym. Yeah, the gym is a lifesaver. And I like gym. We joined a health club at one point, and I don't like health clubs, I like gyms. I like blokes going,
can I just both say, and for the record, yeah. I had to Google how old you are because you both look absolutely fantastic for your age.
Thank you.
I thought you were my age. I was like, I remember right there, my heyday. They're definitely around 50. But you're both in your 60s.
Yeah, 65, 68.
Yeah. Dame Edna Everett said, approaching 70, but from the wrong direction.
What do you attribute your youthfulness to?
Partly luck.
Mum and dad.
Mum and dad.
Yeah.
Mum, before her dementia, she was what, she had about early 80s, wasn't it? Before dementia.
It really was.
Dementia. And she would run for the bus, and if you saw, you'd think she was late 60s, maybe early 70s, yeah. And she was mid sort of early 80s. So I think we're blessed, and really
we're vain too.
Yeah, and I should look appalling because of the amount of late nights and drugs I did. I should look really bad, but it's luck partly.
I think also we didn't leave home until we were in our late 20s, early 30s, and so we didn't get into, if we'd got left home earlier and got into that sort of late teens, early 20s,
yeah,
sort of music scene. We weren't boozers. We weren't. I wasn't. I mean, I you know, my drug thing was nowhere near as prolific as Fred, really. I just was useless at it. I just, you know, we were just, I think the gym, because I started training many years ago, way before the ban happened.
84?
Yeah, about 84. I think that just changes your, just, even if you're a heavy drinker and a heavy smoker, once you start going to the gym, you start to question everything.
I'm a big believer in it. I'm a bodybuilder myself, funnily enough.
Right.
I absolutely believe in lifting resistance weights and going for walks. I'm as simple as that. Yeah, getting out into fresh air. So, gentlemen, yes. You are no strangers to a bit of controversy in your day. And you've recently hit the press again with your outspoken views on the government and what's going on currently with the pandemic.
Yeah.
Can you just let me know a little bit more about your views and what sparked the controversy this time?
I'll let Fred will do the March thing, but my theory is that this is the culmination of many years of government intervention. what we're seeing now, people think this is a two-year-old thing. It's not really. This is just the culmination of stuff that's been going on probably since the war, where the state has increasingly taken an active role in how you lead your life, what you eat, how much exercise you should have, how to stand at the ATM, whether you can look at cigarettes. You either treat the population that you represent as adults or you treat them as children. And for years now, we have been treated like children and we've been infantilized, I think. And that's why people, that you see so many idiots wearing masks, because they are so used to deferring to the state their own health, their own ability to think for themselves. They don't even question it anymore.
So on the masks, and Fred, I will come to you, but you know, Boris, literally, as we speak now,
yeah.
Today is the first day he's just brought masks back in as mandatory in certain shops. If I was to play devil advocate, and you said you don't wear masks, well, aren't you? Will you be spreading your germs or your potential COVID if you have it?
Well, I have been spreading germs since I was 12.
But the germs.
All kinds of germs. No, I think what's interesting is there's a piece from Dr. Hillary, which was recorded about a year ago, saying how pointless masks are. There was a massive teachers' conference, and they're all packed in a room together having a lovely time, not a single mask in sight. That's the teaching awards, and those very same people will go back to their schools and tell the kids to wear masks. The whole thing is a complete and utter scam.
It's theatre.
And, you know, you see people walking into a restaurant with a mask on, then they take the mask off when they sit down, and then they put it back on when they're at the toilet. I mean, come on.
I mean, it makes no sense to me that they're saying you can wear it in pubs and restaurants because COVID isn't allowed there, obviously underage.
Yes.
But you have to wear it in Marks and Spencer's or, you know, the chemist. It just, for me, is COVID not coming into certain shops or is it? Yeah. It just doesn't make sense.
There's a guy on Twitter, he was talking about a club he went to and he had to wear a mask at the bar to order a drink. But then when you're on the dance floor, you take it off.
Well, obviously, COVID doesn't like dancing.
In the same
time. Got two left feet.
Yeah, exactly. For me, it's just think for yourself. Just think for yourself. Does it make sense to you? And it never made sense to me. But it's also the illusion that if you wear a mask, you're doing it for other people. You're not. It is a manifestation of complete self-obsession and absorption.
What part do you think the media have played in this?
Well, the media have been really... The media have been extraordinarily compliant. And one of the stories I've heard, and I don't know whether it's true, is that Ofcom instructed all media outlets that they weren't allowed to push or publicise whatever, any narrative that contradicted the government advice. So if you're wondering why there has been no forensic journalism about this, no real attempt to attack, not to attack, but to analyse what's going on, the reason perhaps is because Ofcom made it clear right from the beginning, after pressure from the government, that nobody was allowed to contradict official government policy. Mm. So whether that's true or not, I don't know. But it certainly would explain the universal silence from journalists. Yeah.
How do you think censorship is affecting our society or is going to set? Because that's really freedom of speech,
yeah,
right?
Christopher Hitchens said, the thing about censorship is it robs two people. It robs the person of being able to say what they think and it robs the person who was going to listen to that viewpoint. It robs two sets of people. So censorship is not just about stopping people speaking, it's also about stopping people hearing. That's what censorship is.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very dangerous thing.
I mean, how many times have you seen, you know, Peter McCulloch or Robert Malone or...
Mike Eden.
Yeah, Claire Craig, Mike Eden. How many times have you seen more mainstream media? Yeah.
Well, a lot of people would say, and again, funnily enough, I was sent this the other day, of Dr. Robert Malone and Mike Eden of, obviously... they are conspiracy theorists and they've gone against and are trying to cause bad vibes in the society whatever they're saying is not true, simply not true. I mean, what are your views on that?
My view on that is let the public make their decision. Mm. So you would put Mike Eden on, let's say, Good Morning Britain. You'd have Dr. Hillary Jones talking to Carl Hennigan or Mike Eden or Dr. Peter McCulloch, and then let's see if Henry Jones can actually hold his ground, which I doubt, in the presence of those sort of people, and let the public decide. And let the public decide let Lorraine Kelly talk to those doctors instead of just kissing ass with Dr. Hillary Jones, actually actually come into a debate.
Yeah, you know, you're two people I'm speaking to, and I've spoken to a few others, and, you know, there are people that have the same views.
Yeah.
Why do you think some people can see it and some people can't see it?
Personally, I think there are a lot of people, and I'm just saying from what I see on social media, they know they've been duped. I'm seeing people who've had who've been double vaccinated, and now the booster is a step too far. People who've had the booster are just beginning to twig. They're going to have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or however, however many.
Power and money speaks, and health unfortunately doesn't. Because if you're healthy and you've got a strong immune system, it doesn't pay.
Well, it pays
to be sick. It's that simple. And I'm not saying anything away from anyone that's died. It's horrendous. I mean, I've had COVID. I've got over it. I just feel that the emphasis should be put on being healthy rather than treating.
Right from the beginning, the government could have done that. Exactly. They had that choice. They could have recommended vitamin D and zinc and then proper diet and sleep and cut down your smoking if you smoke, cut down your drinking if you drink, blah, blah, blah.
Go for a walk, get some fresh air. Yeah.
You know, consider your weight, all this. They could have done that. But there's no money in it. And David Davis stood up in the House, and he's one of the few guys in the House, in all fairness, who rattles on about this. And he stood up in the House about a year and a half ago and asked Boris Johnson about vitamin D and what the government were doing about, you know, the advantages of taking vitamin D and when the government would perhaps recommend it. And Johnson's response was, "We're looking into it." That's another example of the Labour Party just missing the train. You know, rather than taking a different course and thinking clearly about what was happening, they just tried to out-Tory the Tories. That's all they tried to do.
I don't think they're meant to be opposition.
Oh, no. There is that.
Parliament's
become sort of shades of grey. I mean, a complete mess. Yeah. I mean, I think what's more dangerous, and going back to the sort of the fear, is how this is dividing people up.
It is, yeah.
We all live in England. Yeah. We remember Brexit, and you couldn't say, "Oh, I voted for Brexit," or "I didn't vote for Brexit." It would cause World War III. But this is deeper. This is much deeper.
It's psychological, spiritual war.
The interesting thing is, well, I saw a clip of the terminally stupid David Lammy talking about Brexit. Let it go, mate. Let it go. Because he's a Remainer. And it was advisory only, so he won't absorb it.
Yeah, it's happened, exactly.
So I think what's interesting about that is people like that have absolutely no patience with a democratic vote if it doesn't suit their purposes. And that tells you a lot about what some politicians are like. They are not particularly, I think they look at Xi Jinping in China, who's going to be the president for the next God knows how long, with envious eyes. He doesn't have to put himself up to the electorate. And I'm sure there are some MPs in the House who think, "Oh, that would be nice. That would be nice if I could just stay here for 40 years. That would be brilliant. I don't have to put myself in front of those dreadful voters." There's a refusal to value the most precious things we have, which is freedom of conscience. I mean, the church closing its doors under government edict when 300 years ago people were being burned at the stake for what they believed in.
You know, freedom of speech. And just bringing that round as well, because you've just released, I know we've gone sort of circle, we talked about I'm Too Sexy at the beginning, but you've just released an absolutely a beautiful song, not just released, it was a few months ago, if I'm right, Your Inner Light of Love. Now, I listened to that a couple of days ago, and it actually made me cry, but in a sort of good way, because I've been feeling that our society is being ripped apart. There is a divide. Unfortunately, these labels are being, you know, construed, whatever your opinion is, vaccinated, non-vaccinated, this anti-vax, which is just such a derogatory term, and it's horrible.
Yeah,
I listened to your song and it actually brought it all back to me. But how do you think we can bring our society together?
Actually, quite easily. I really do.
Yeah.
And it is literally, you make yourselves ungovernable and you don't comply. You just go, "No, we're not doing that." It is as simple as that. Even just to make government look at themselves. Because at the moment, if you comply, and I happen to think wearing a mask where it's not law is a manifestation of your compliance. I happen to think that. People are welcome to disagree. That's my position. And I think you don't comply with when you go to a shop. If they say wear a mask, you just say no. That is it. Because first of all, there's the science to support masks is almost it's very weak. And I think you need, as a society, as taxpayers, as citizens, the public, etc., we just need to go, okay, enough is enough. Let's draw a line under this and let's start again and have this an adult conversation about what's going on. But if you continue this compliance, if you continue this subservience, which I think exactly what it is, I think you're going to end up in a very dark place. I happen to think there's an awakening in a lot of people. I know you don't see it on the mainstream news, but the protests across the world now are quite extraordinary. Protesting in places where protests are illegal, like in Italy.
So do you see a happy, I want to say ending to this, but do you see us ever going back to where we were two years ago?
It won't ever go back.
No.
But it can find its own way. Mm. And I think there are people who bought the initial pitch. Okay, we get it. There's a virus. We have to do this. But now, you know, I've done my double jab. Now you want a booster. Now you're telling me I might need a booster up to four times a year or three times a year. Well, why would I do that? And I think there's a lot of people questioning this because there's a lack of logic.
Well, that's it. It's we're not saying do this, do that. It's question.
It is question. It is.
And just ask the question and make your own mind up.
Exactly. We're just forgetting really fundamental realities, I think, about, you know, the right to choose.
So why is it Right Said Fred is standing up together? Where are all your other artist friends? That's what I want to know.
There are a few.
There are some. You know, obviously there's been Clapton and Van Morrison, Ian Brown, Matt Hoy, Jim Corr. There's been a few. There are some, interestingly, there are rappers like Hi Rez. They've just done a song, Where's the Revolution? Where's the Revolution?
Jimmy Levy.
Good song. Yeah, it's a good song. And so there are some artists doing it. I think... Yeah, the mainstream artists, you like the Pfizer Chiefs and, Kaiser Chiefs.
the Pfizer Chiefs.
But they are the Pfizer, you know. They have just sold their soul. Yeah. I mean, what that guy did, I don't even know his name, what that guy did to telling people to actually naming the different vaccines was just...
And then the audience cheer. Like,
well, because
rally.
Yeah, it was a very dark moment for pop music. And I think they'll live to regret that. And I think a lot of people are just co-opted with managers, labels. I mean, we've lost a lot of money. I'm not saying it's easy. And my daughter's got her own job now, and along with her, my wife is independent. And so we're very fortunate that we don't have young kids at school and stuff. So I do get that. But also, we have made quite large financial sacrifices because of the position we've taken. So.
But do you feel like you've got anything to lose by speaking out?
No. I think you just stand your ground.
Do you Do you feel like you've got anything to lose by keeping it inside?
Yes, I think if you lie to yourself,
I think
I think you're broken. I really do. I think you have to have laid on Twitter, and I really understand that she's dreading going to work today because it'll be a mask mandate where she's working, and she's absolutely dreading it. And for her, probably it's very, very tricky because she's got a wife, a husband and kids, or family, whatever, to feed and stuff. So it's not easy for everybody. We are lucky in as much as we have lost a lot of money, but because we write songs, we have publishing money coming in. So we are able to live. But for a lot of people, that's not the case.
Final notes, Right Said Fred.
Yeah.
Future. What is the future for you guys?
The physical nature of music has changed. So the idea that, for example, we were offered a run of shows in South Africa. Now, that's now on the red list. So that's gone.
Yeah.
And that will be repeated for thousands of artists and thousands of shows throughout the world. So we decided last year that we need to check. The business model is broken. So we've bought into the first NFT, UK NFT platform. That's called NFT Bulldog. And we co-own that. And we're launching new artists on that.
Yeah.
We're involved with a couple of films. We thought we were fully funded on one. That's got, because of COVID, that's gone a bit pear-shaped. Mm-hmm. And we have been a well-known US documentary maker has approached us about making a documentary. So we're keeping ourselves busy and writing and
Twittering.
And we've got a new song coming out in January or Feb, which is called Godsend.
What would you say to future generations that may be watching this? What advice would you give them? You've had an amazing life. What one thing maybe would you pick?
stand in your own truth.
Yes. Always think for yourself.
Yeah.
Always.
And own the truth.
Yeah.
Richard, Fred, right said Fred. Thank you for being a guest on my show. Thank you. Oh, God, I want to give you both a hug. Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, there's a new interview out every Monday. So hit subscribe and like, and you'll get it straight into your inbox.